Monday night edition, super late edition of the Dunktown Basketball Podcast here at 12:48 Pacific time on actually Tuesday morning, perhaps more accurately. We are recording this late because we just got back from the Warriors-Spurs game of the century that wasn't, at least in terms of competitiveness, but was perhaps in just at least one all-time great team showing up. Danny, what's up?
Yeah, I mean, it was really a performance, but I will note that for me, super early or whatever you want to call it is still reserved for when I tortured you by doing our July 1st podcast at 3 in the morning.
Yeah, that was a little rough, and that was like an hour and a half podcast. Was that the one where we went through like every single signing that had happened over like that crazy first day?
Yes.
Well, I look forward to doing that again this year. So the lead up, obviously, Tim Duncan did not play. We talked about that on the program yesterday, and Pop had some interesting audio. I asked him pregame about what sort of an emphasis he was putting on home court advantage, and here's what he had to say on that.
Well, we won't do anything differently. I think the, you know, the rest and the understanding of what players need in that regard trumps everything, because if you screw that up, it doesn't matter what your record is or what position you have in the seating. So, you know, taking care of your group is number one, and wherever you end up, you end up. I mean, nobody would turn down the best record. That would be foolish to do. But you can't do it at the expense of players. So we would never do that.
And also somebody asked him how worried he was about Tim Duncan's injury, and another awesome Pop response to that question.
How concerned are you about Tim Duncan's knee?
How concerned? Geez, I just don't know what to do with myself. What do I have to do with it, right? Being concerned about things isn't really do much, because I have nothing to do with when his knee is going to get better or not get better, so I don't think about it. If they say he can play, then he plays. So being concerned is a waste of time.
And also, stay tuned to the end. He had just really, I'll probably just play the audio of the entire, not the entire, but the beginning of his pregame interview was absolutely fantastic, just peak Pop. And so we'll certainly put that at the end, but it's kind of not really germane to the game, which we should talk about right now. Dane, what are your kind of opening thoughts here?
What I was kind of most impressed by, and I know this isn't going to be a focus of this, was how well the Warriors' defense kind of prevented what the Spurs really wanted to do. Like, you look at San Antonio shot charts and all that. For me, you focus on the first three quarters of this game. The fourth quarter is just itself. And so the Spurs, only 12 of their 52 first three-quarter shots were in the restricted area. The Warriors was closer to half. And they struggled to get reliable points everywhere.
Yeah, they did. And only 14 three-point attempts for the game, 13 through that three quarters, after which the Warriors led 95-66 by 29 points. And this is actually something we've talked about a little bit with the Spurs. Early on in the year, their offense did not look that great. They really, their two primary offensive players now are mid-range artists in Kawhi and LaMarcus, also guys who don't pass a ton. They do not do quite as much of the drive and kick, Spursgasm, beautiful basketball that we saw back in 2014, and when you've added individual talents, maybe you don't play that way as much, but I had posited that they might have a little trouble playing that way against the Warriors because they just have so many good individual defenders, and that was certainly the case today, where Kawhi and LaMarcus both really got bottled up extremely well. The Warriors' hands were in the passing lanes to a ridiculous degree, and they ended up with 15 steals in this game. I mean, just how quick their hands were unbelievable. We'll get a little bit more detail on that. But that, I thought that was a really good takeaway for I understand why that was it for you. But for me, it was just Steph Curry just torched this team. And the thought that this greatest defensive team ever was going to be able to slow him down, at least for one night, was not the case.
Yeah, that's certainly true. And what I was interested in afterwards, after the game, I watched all of Clay's shots, not all of his offensive possessions, but all of his shots. And what was interesting is I think they did a pretty good job on him. A lot of his looks were in transition or on scramble plays and things like that. But Curry was just getting his.
Yeah, he probably made San Antonio defenders look silly at least five or six times that I could think of. There was the left to right behind the back and then finish off his right foot in transition after a steal. He had this spin move on Patty Mills 30 feet from the basket where he made him look done. There's the amazing play against Kawhi on the wing where he went back door, faked him out, pump faked him, stepped back, you know, basically made him like fall over himself twice and drained a three. There was one between the legs on a hesitation where he just blew by LaMarcus. You just don't see guys getting blown by like that in the NBA. A lot of that is his great handle, but even more of it is just the threat of his shooting. And because he can shoot it from so far out, it just changes the experience for guys. It changes the angles where normally you're kind of operating a little bit closer to the rim. And if you fall back, you can kind of cut off the angle. But because he's so far away, once he gets by you with a head of steam, there's no way you can get back in front of him. He's just going to get you on his back, and then it's all over for you.
Yeah, there was one play that stuck out to me where Kawhi was on Curry. I think it was in the second quarter. And the Bogut set a screen. It was probably about – the screen was probably about 28 feet out. And so Curry is at about 27. He's going downhill a little bit. Kawhi is trailing him, and Curry just shoots it. And, you know, most of the time you're going to get that, you know, that you're, if that's the result of the play, you're fine with it. But when you're dealing with the greatest shooter of all time, you have to, that didn't work. And you just sit there and you think about Kawhi, still the defensive player of the year, you know, whatever happened today is totally kind of not separate from that, but it didn't hurt his case much. But Curry is just, he can do those things. And what I was thinking about a lot in this game was how the Spurs series 3 years ago, I think, really helped this Warriors team deal with pressure and ball denial, which they're doing a much better job of now than they were then.
Absolutely. I thought that was a key aspect as well, something that's been a little bit underpublicized about how the Spurs are doing this with this all-time great defense, is that they really are pressuring up a lot more than you would see in past years with some of these great wing defenders. Jonathan Simmons has fit right into that now. Patty Mills does a really good job of that. Kawhi, obviously, Danny Green. Those guys, even Tony Parker will do it a little bit, and Manu as well, even though they're not quite as good. And, you know, we used to think of the Spurs, Twin Towers, just, you know, Tim Duncan hang out inside. You know, you can't score on them inside. But their perimeter pressure has been great to just prevent teams from running their offense. They try to switch not all that much. And what the Warriors were able to do is get a ton of backdoors, both through Draymond Green's passing, Klay Thompson probably moved without the ball, going backdoor just about better than I've ever seen from him. And so I asked Coach Kerr if that was a particular emphasis, knowing that the Spurs like to deny the ball, and here's what he had to say.
Coach, the Spurs like to deny the ball on the wing a lot, and you guys got some backdoors, especially in that second quarter. Was that a point of emphasis coming in to go backdoor when you got denied?
It's always a point of emphasis for us. You know, if the defense puts pressure on, you have to go backdoor. You got to keep the flow going. And so, if anybody overplays you, I mean, our guys are taught just cut backdoor, and the next guy will fill the spot and keep the ball moving. And you know, that was something that really was a point of emphasis when I played in San Antonio for Pop. That's what they do. Going back to the Chicago days when I played, you know, Phil and Tex used to talk about, you know, go away from pressure. Don't go into pressure. Go away from pressure. And it's just kind of a basic concept of basketball, but you got to have guys who understand it and who can make plays and keep the ball moving. And we're lucky to have this roster full of talented guys who are unselfish and committed to each other.
And I thought that was a great answer, and really maybe even a dumb question for me, but an illuminating answer, because you have to practice that all the time, right? This started a year and a half ago with them. You can't just say, oh, hey, we're playing the Spurs, we got to go back door extra hard. You can't just ingrain that habit over the course of one regular season game or even trying to prepare for a playoff series. You have to have it in you over, you know, an entire season and hopefully even multiple seasons if you're lucky to have the type of continuity that the Warriors have. And that's where all the coaching takes place. It's not a question of saying, hey, go do this in the huddle during the game. It's all right, we practice this, we know what to do, we're not going to get bothered by this pressure. And it helps a lot, too, when you have just an unbelievable passer like Draymond Green to run those backdoors with.
And Andre Iguodala, I think he did an incredible job passing in this game. And
yeah, hit Bogut. I mean, there's all of them can pass, right?
Yeah. And
Sean Livingston is a good passer. He's also a great cutter as well. It's remarkable the talent that they have in the team.
And the part of Kerr's answer, the other part that I really liked was the idea of how, you know, cutting the other players have jobs to do too. And I think that's the part of it that sometimes can get lost in the shuffle, particularly for, you know, teams that don't get to hit all the notes right, is that, you know, how when a guy takes that opportunity, that affects what everybody else needs to do, especially if it doesn't yield a basket right away. And the Warriors have done a really nice job of that. And what I was thinking about also with this game is just offensively with the Warriors, they're so good on broken plays and second chance plays that if they're going to get those, you know, if the opportunities present themselves. And something the Spurs players talked about a lot was turnovers. And the big part for me with that is that if the Warriors are turning you over defensively, that plus the broken plays is basically going to give them enough offense considering how good their defense is.
Yeah, that's something that Draymond Green cited. He said he thought that they're number one in transition points, and they're certainly right up there if they're not number one. The Spurs are defensively, but that, you know, when there's a turnover, that really messes up your transition defense. Missing layups will also do that. They got some fast breaks off of missed layups or block shots as well. I went back and looked at, you know, watched the first three quarters before we did this podcast. I wanted to see how many of those Spurs turnovers really were just boner, unforced type of plays. And they had a few of those, but most of those were just, I mean, were great steals. I mean, you know, 15 steals is more than you'll recall seeing very often in an NBA game. And the Warriors just have great hands. They were just taking the ball from guys. They're deflecting passes, you know, on the ball, deflecting the pass to the next guy. You know, it wasn't like necessarily the Spurs were just making a bunch of really stupid plays. They were getting pressured into it, and they were getting hands on. Now, they're not going to turn the ball over 26 times in their next meeting, obviously, but I did think that a lot of it was more what the Warriors were doing right, or at least in equal proportions to the Spurs doing it wrong.
Yeah, and you remember that play in the first quarter when Curry was guarding Kawhi, I think, was in transition, and he just kind of fronted him, did a nice job, and then Green came over with help, and the Spurs turned the ball over. And so you think about a play like that where, you know, the Spurs did not execute right, but the Warriors kind of, I would say, they forced the mistake.
Let's take a second to talk to you about a sponsor. I want to inform you guys, big news, Danny and I are huge nerds. You may actually have realized that already because we talk about exceedingly nerdy subjects on this show. And we're both cat dorks, but as huge nerds, we both enjoy Loot Crate, which is a monthly subscription box service for epic geek and gamer items and pop culture gear. For less than $20 a month, you get 6 to 8 items that includes licensed gear, apparel, collectibles, unique one-of-a-kind items, and more. They guarantee it's at least $45 worth of gear, and it's stuff you can't get anywhere else because they work directly with these merchandising companies to fix it so you're getting a unique value. Loot Crate is like a friend that knows what you love and surprises you with an awesome present every month. Also, for our international listeners, they ship to 27 countries. I know we've had some people talk to us saying, hey, we'd love to support the show, but international, none of your sponsors ship there. This is your chance to support the show. If you live internationally, they ship to 27 countries, so you can check that out on the site. If you now go onto their site and use the code CAPSPACE, you can get $3 off that monthly charge, and also let them know that you came from us. They are a new sponsor. We would love for them to continue sponsoring the show, and a great way to do that is to go and get yourself some awesome gear every month from Loot Crate using that CAPSPACE code. Yeah, that's absolutely. And Steph, I mean, he had 5 steals. I mean, let's just go. His stat line was unbelievable. 5 steals. He probably had another 4 deflections or so in addition to his steals. Really just an unbelievable hands game from him. Green as well. He was fantastic with 3 steals. Steph overall, 12 out of 20 from the field, 6 of 9 from 3, 7 of 7 from the line, of course. 37 points in 28 minutes against a team that basically was on pace probably to be the best defense ever relative to the league coming in. So pretty darn impressive. How much would you say that the Spurs missed Tim Duncan in this game?
Sure, I think they did, because one of the Warriors' greatest successes in this game was that they did well in the restricted area, not in terms of percentage, but just by getting a lot of shots there, and having Tim Duncan reduces that, you know, willingness to do that because he's such a good rim protector. But the Warriors, theoretically, if they'd wanted to really throw some more stuff out of the playbook, they could have gone smaller and exploited that as well.
Yeah, Tim obviously is the quarterback of their defense, as most brilliant defensive big men are. And I think he also, especially when he was guarding Bogut, could have laid off and been more helpful on some of those back doors at the rim, although many of those developed extremely quickly. So maybe he wouldn't have been able to get there. But yeah, I think there certainly might have been counters there where they could have gone small. And where they really struggled a lot was in the bigs helping out on pick and roll defense. And I think that Duncan would not have particularly helped there. The Warriors had great success on running a variant of that same Clippers play, which they run themselves, obviously, even, you know, when they're not playing San Antonio, that so bedeviled San Antonio in the playoffs last year with that double high screen really high out on the floor. And what the Warriors did with it a lot of times was Steph would fake towards one side, make that big come and help out, and then he would use the screen on the other side, and that always would get him picked off of his man, even if it was Kawhi, and then Steph would be wide open. Tony Parker would even try going under on Steph a few times just because he felt like he was so far away that he couldn't shoot it. But then once you actually lose being attached to Steph, he's so crafty that you're just going to never get attached to him again. He'll just use the screen again, and then you're just going to be burned. You'll be the big ass to help out, and then it's either a double team or it's a Steph three. And, I mean, Steph, just his individual brilliance, the way he used screens in this game, I mean, that's why I think ultimately the whole Kawhi thing, guarding him, doesn't matter as much, because he's just going to be able to use a pick and get Kawhi off of him, you know. And it's not the same as LeBron James, who, because he can't shoot, can't really use screens anymore against Kawhi.
I think that the end game, and I'm not saying this will be true in March or even April, because I assume these teams, if they face each other, it'll be in May, is I think you put Danny Green and Kawhi on the Draymond Curry pick and roll, and you just, whoever is on, you know, you do it that way, just because I think that gives you the best chance. They didn't do that at all in this game, not that I remember, and I'm sure Pop has thought of it. You know, it's not like, oh my God, this is some genius idea, but the reason for that, something that I considered a lot in this, was just that the Spurs don't have a ton of personnel that really works in that kind of a situation. Like Boris Diaw was in a couple of Draymond Curry pick and rolls and they just lit him up. It's a very hard thing to do. There aren't many individuals who can do it, and so I think you have to have as many of them as you have, just throw them in there at the same time.
Well, the other problem then, if you're going to put Kawhi or even Danny Green on Curry, is that then it's going to be Tony Parker in the post. And in the second quarter, especially when they had their bench out there, the Warriors mercilessly exploited that. Barnes got a bucket on him. Sean Livingston got a bucket on him. Draymond got the switch. He backed down Andre Iguodala. They double-teamed a couple times in not particularly crafty fashion with Kawhi, where Sean Livingston was able to get dunks on those plays. There was basically about four or five possessions in a row where the Warriors attached that matchup and got buckets. And that's why I think we were worried that for Golden State, that they would not be able to keep up with the Spurs bench. They were able to score just fine. A lot of it was because they actually came back with Parker to start the second quarter, and then he wasn't able to hold up defensively, although he has overall been better this year.
Yeah, something that struck me during this game is the conceptual thing of, what if Tony Parker defensively is their Kevin Love? You know, if he's a guy that is just not at the level to basically prevent himself from being exploited wherever you put him.
We heard people saying, oh, hey, just, start Patty Mills, or, you know, just don't play a point guard at all. Well, the problem is with their starting unit, I mean, maybe you could, if you started Manu, you'd be a little bit better off, but I don't think Manu is going to do some amazing job on Curry. Maybe he'd hold up a little bit better against someone like Barnes. But you're basically, with this starting lineup, you need someone in there who can run a pick and roll, and Parker is really the guy for that. Otherwise, you're just going to be total isolations with Kawhi and with LaMarcus, and you're not going to score well enough to beat this Golden State team with Steph Curry going well. I mean, we talked about it a little bit. On the rewatch, is there anything that occurred to you that San Antonio could be doing better defensively? Because I don't think they really even had that terrible of a defensive game, frankly.
No, I think that I didn't see anything that stuck out. A lot of the choices, you know, when they were getting back cut, the Warriors were making really nice passes. I mean, the windows were tight and they were nailing those windows. That's just something that's going to happen. I mean,
you might say you want to try to pressure up Draymond Green more on those plays, because that's a great way to take away back cuts, is if you've got a guy reaching in and pressuring you, you can't just surgically slice apart. But what power forwards are going to be able to do that? And then you go back to, well, maybe really the answer then is you play Kawhi at the four and go small with LaMarcus at the five. But then, you know, maybe you're getting into Golden State's game as well. And I don't think we'll see a ton of that until the playoffs, if we ever even do.
Yeah. And the other component of this that I think it's not really a defensive thing, Seth Partnow brought it up, is that I think that San Antonio's offense hurt their defense a lot in this game just because of how good the Warriors are in that. So if they get better there, I think that gives them more of a margin to work with.
Yeah, I mean, there are 28 possessions in the first quarter, and even a normal Warriors game will usually be about 25. A normal NBA game will be 23, 24. And a lot of that was due to the turnovers, and obviously then Golden State shooting quickly as well. And really, there are 79 possessions through the first three quarters, and that's not going to work for San Antonio. And I mean, you might even say that San Antonio with LaMarcus, with Kawhi, maybe they should sort of pursue a modified strategy kind of similar to what Cleveland did last year in the finals, where, all right, we're just going to pound. We're not going to turn it over. We're going to make sure that we get back. Now, San Antonio isn't going to get on the offensive glass the way Cleveland is, but they also have a lot more defensive talent, and maybe that's the only way that you're going to find to slow this team down. But that is a big-time departure for a San Antonio team that, you know, is in the top five in offense themselves this year.
And it's a very scary proposition when you're facing a team with the offensive capabilities that the Warriors do, because there are times, what I think makes the Warriors special is that there are times that even when you're defending them well, they can go off. And so if you're kind of narrowing it down and, you know, doing what Cleveland did against a team that has that kind of firepower, you're setting yourself up for a challenging situation. You can argue that that still is their best chance at a victory. And something else in this game that is maybe a lingering storyline, we've talked about it a little bit on the podcast, but I saw it a lot more in person, was that the Spurs starting lineup, and we'll say the Duncan West difference doesn't make a huge difference in this case, doesn't have a ton of guys who are just really good natural ball movers. Like Danny Green has a lot of strengths. I love him as a, you know, kind of a 3-and-D guy. But when you think about that, the trade-off that you're making with him as an offensive creator, it was a very different thing with other lineups. But now when you have LaMarcus and Kawhi, who are getting better at it but still don't do that, it changes the way that defenses have to adapt to you if they have a good communication, which the Warriors do.
Yeah, and Danny Green, the one time he tried to drive today was a complete disaster. He's horrible off the dribble, really just a standstill three-point shooter. And against the Warriors, you're going to be hard-pressed to get that many three-point looks. The Spurs are down on three-point looks this year anyway, and if they can't get more than 14 three-point attempts, unless you are going to get to the foul line an absolute crap load, which and they did a little bit in this game, but probably not as much as, still as you would need to offset the lack of threes, you're going to really struggle to be efficient against that kind of defensive talent. A few more notes on this game, just kind of random stuff that I'm trying to look in. We talked on a podcast about a month ago. I looked at Kawhi's post game and I thought that maybe one thing to try, especially when he's in a mismatch, is a hard double. The Warriors tried that twice when Sean Livingston was on him, but the guy they sent over to double was Maurice Spates.
Yes.
And he did not do a particularly good job of that. And the reason that that strategy works is that you're pinning him on one side of the floor and he can't find you know, he's got to throw a looping pass all the way to the weak side. Spates just ran over there willy-nilly, let Kawhi drive by him. Because, you know, when you double team, you're not supposed to let the guy go around to the outside, you know, away from the second defender and around you as well. And that's what Kawhi was able to do a couple times. He got to the middle, and the Spurs got a couple of nice buckets off of that. I still think it's a decent strategy. I mean, you know, everyone who suggests a strategy always wants to blame the execution if it doesn't work. But I think in this case, there's a decent argument there.
Yes.
I also thought that Forrest Dia and Kyle Anderson both looked horrendous in this game.
They did. And that Dia was a guy that I was interested in seeing how he looked against the Warriors second unit. And the answer was not particularly great.
Yeah, he's getting into close to his mid-30s now. He, even last year, was not the same guy. This year, he's someone that they really need. You know, we talked about how they don't move the ball as much anymore. He was, you know, really one of the extraordinary guys in a lot of those sequences they used to have. He also, you know, was shooting 40% on threes back in that 2014 run, and now he is very, very reluctant to shoot the ball. He eschewed a number of open threes in this game to kind of drive into traffic, and also the Warriors have the type of guys who can cause problems for him defensively. Like if it's someone like Green, even Harrison Barnes, they did a good job executing the scouting report, not letting him get to that left shoulder. So he's going to need to play a lot better for them, especially if their bench is going to kind of fulfill its potential to beat up on the Warriors bench. I think that that's when Steph's out of the game, the Spurs need to dominate in this matchup in the future. And Dia is going to be a huge part of that. And then Kyle Anderson, you know, looked too slow. He was playing the four, didn't really protect the basket at all, you know, hit a couple of fadeaways, but didn't really do much to make me think that he's going to be a tremendously positive player. But, you know, if Duncan is playing, then he's not going to play at all.
Yeah, he's out of it. I've thought a lot about Kyle Anderson since Summer League, and it's not really the time for that, but I don't think the four is his position.
Yeah, it is not the time for that. Danny Green was taken out of the game in a pop special early in the third quarter. I went back and looked at the film to try and see if I could figure out why that was. I think what it was that there was a Steph pick and roll on the left side that got double teamed, and then Green cut to the free throw line. Draymond Green cut to the free throw line. Danny Green did not get over to the free throw line to stop that roll off of Klay Thompson. He was too worried about Klay's shooting. And right after that play, Pop personally walked all the way down to the bench and grabbed Jonathan Simmons, who played the remainder of the quarter. And he actually had some encouraging moments in this game as well on both ends. I mean, he sort of, I thought actually his defense reminded me a little bit of Kentavious Caldwell-Pope's defense, and you know his ability to explode to the basket was impressive. We'll see whether he can shoot well enough against good defense, but he was the one guy Pop cited in his exceedingly brief post-game remarks as actually like showing much of a heart, because he kept saying over and over it was just men against boys in this game.
Props to Pop for basically just walking away after about 2 minutes from just being like, yep, I'm done.
Yeah, I had a minute 48 seconds on my my personal recorder. Anything else we need to talk about from this game? I think I got to pretty much all my notes here. Did you have anything else?
Let me look. I think that was just about it. We talked about this a little bit, but the Warriors had 25 assists in the first three quarters, because I don't care about the fourth quarter. Warriors had 25 assists on 35 made baskets with 15 turnovers. The Spurs had 15 assists on 22 makes with 20 turnovers. If those numbers are even, if that discrepancy is even close, it's going to be brutally hard for the Spurs to win a game.
The turnover discrepancy
Kind of the whole picture. I mean, so the Spurs, yeah. The Spurs had, if you're making that many fewer shots, if you're turning the ball over, but the Spurs won't do that very often. I mean, this was probably the worst game the Spurs have played this season, maybe the worst game they'll play all season, and one of the best, if not the best game the Warriors have played. But the Warriors, they're special on both ends, and what that does is it means that you have to execute so well in order to beat them, or they need to be off. And one other thing I want to mention, I've been thinking about this a lot, I was looking at the Spurs losses and the Warriors losses, is that beyond the whole injury component with the Warriors ones, is that all of San Antonio's losses were pretty much justifiable. Like, they were the good teams, except for the New Orleans one. And that was, I think, right after they were starting to get healthy. And the Warriors, like, their losses are more just, they just blew a game for whatever reason. I thought that was interesting. I don't know what to make of it yet, but I found it interesting.
Well, and I also think that the Spurs, in close games, this is surprising for what a veteran team they are, but I actually like the Warriors significantly in close games. I think the Warriors have a ton of comeback potential. We've seen them make unbelievable comebacks over these last 2 years, you know, down 10 with like 2.5 minutes left in the finals, down 20 with 6 minutes left against the Pelicans last year. They just can get to this frenetic other level that I'm not sure that the Spurs have, and the Warriors seem to win every close game. The Spurs, you know, are pretty much normal. The Warriors have had some unbelievable net rating in the clutch, and, you know, sometimes that can be misleading, but I also think that just with what Steph Curry is able to do, if you just go to him every time and they kind of stop messing around or they go to the death lineup, there are reasons to think why that Warriors clutch performance could be real, instead of just being statistical noise, because they go to their best lineup there and they go to their best player the most often there as well. So I think even if it is close, I like the Warriors down the stretch.
Oh, one other thing I want to mention. Other than Curry, in the first three quarters, the other Warriors were 2 of 10 from three. And so you think about how well they won this game. You go, oh, well, you know, and the Warriors, generally the guys who shoot their three-pointers are the guys who should. Clay, I think, was 0 of 3. And both of those makes were actually by Brandon Rush, who didn't play a whole lot at that point.
Yeah, Rush was really the guy who was able to get open. Harrison Barnes is the one guy who had a pretty miserable game in this one for the Warriors. Wasn't really able to get going at all. Missed his couple of threes pretty badly, as I recall. But, you know, I think he's going to come around. He's still kind of working his way back into the flow from the ankle injury. And just the way the Warriors, it always seems like the one game that nobody else can get it going, like that's when Barnes will play well, you know. So the Warriors are now 41-4. That is tied with the 95-96 Bulls, who were 41-3 and then lost their 45th game of the year. Do you think that they are going to set the record now after this run of unbelievable performances over the last week or so?
I certainly think they're capable, but if I have to basically bet on a team being healthy for the second half of the season, I'm not going to do it. So it's certainly on the table. The other really interesting one is 41-0 at home, which I also think is on the table. But again, this is a team that if they can stay healthy, they are the favorites in every single game they play. If they are not healthy, they are not. So I'm not.
So you would favor them even on the road against San Antonio?
I think if in a single game, I would. Because also, you have to. I'm not sure I'd favor them the next time they play the Spurs. The Warriors will be on the back end of a back. Be on the trail end of a back to back. You know, that kind of situation. But if we were to say, like, equal rest, all that on the four, I would probably have the Warriors as a very slight favorite. But, you know, it depends. I think the Warriors, they match up better now than in my thoughts with the Spurs than I thought before tonight. And that's not because they won by 30. It's just because when I saw what the Spurs tried to kind of, how they tried to stop the Warriors, I was just sitting there going, well, the Warriors can overcome that.
Yeah, it's, if you could guarantee me that Draymond, Steph, and Klay were only going to miss, you know, no more than two games apiece the rest of the year, I think they would do it. But I think the odds of that are unfortunately a little bit lower than we'd all like to see. And I do think that while they are a great team, they are really dependent on having all three of those guys available to really be their dominant selves. And if one of those three guys is out, they can lose pretty much any game. And so I think that ultimately I would bet against that level of health. But it is a bet against their health more than it is their talent to say that I don't think they're going to get there.
Agreed.
All right, you want to get to a little bit of news here, including some rather interesting stuff. I think you were up on this more than I was, this Blake Griffin thing. So what do we know so far?
We don't know a ton. So Blake Griffin reportedly, I think Mark Stein broke it. He broke it. He reportedly broke his hand.
He broke that he broke it.
Yeah. It was a The phrasing on it was super weird. I don't know if you remember it better than I do. It was one of those kind of legalese things.
It was amazing. It was basically, let me see if I can find it here. It was Blake Griffin may have broken his hand in a team-related incident or something like that. I mean, there was like four like hashtagable words, all of which I tweeted. So we don't really know enough about this other than that, you know, any broken hand, you're probably going to miss at least a month. So, you know, I think any chance now of the Clippers, especially who have now lost two straight, are any chances of them catching up to Oklahoma City are probably gone. They don't really have anyone in their rearview mirror. So you can probably lock them into the four seed. So that'll be an interesting second round series against the Warriors, which is looking more likely now. With the Warriors having a little bit more of a lead now on the Spurs. I mean, I don't think there's much else to say until we find out more details.
Yeah, it reportedly happened in Toronto, which some people had speculated before we knew the time. Well, we still don't know the timeline, was that maybe it had been involved with Josh Smith, just got traded really kind of surprisingly. But according to this reporting, it happened after, so it's not related to that. I want to read the tweet because I found it, and the wording is just spectacular. ESPN sources tell Ramona Shelburne and I, Mark Stein, that Blake Griffin has suffered suspected broken hand in undisclosed team-related incident.
Yeah, suspected, hashtag suspected, hashtag undisclosed, hashtag team-related, hashtag incident.
It's a really remarkable phrase.
Oh, man, that's rather remarkable. I feel like he doesn't seem to take things that seriously, like at least off the court, to where, you know, obviously the implication is he punched someone. We'll see if that's actually true or not. But then again, I mean, you see how angry he gets at the refs. Maybe, you know, he has more of a temper than we ever realized. But I will be waiting to see what happened here, if the truth ever does in fact come out. But let's get to something that involves a little bit less speculation. Derrick Rose left the Bulls' loss, a terrible loss, by the way, at home to the Heat, who were missing two starters in this game with, I think it was hamstring tightness. Again, you know, he's really struggled with his hamstrings. And as I've said before, and I just apparently need to say again, the only thing that matters is just keeping him healthy until the playoffs. Don't worry about your seed. Play him 20 to 25 minutes a game and, you know, really 30 minutes absolute max, and just hope that you can keep him in condition and in rhythm well enough that the lottery hits, that he's okay when the playoffs start. And he actually had been playing very well up until these last two games where he couldn't make a layup, but he still was getting to the rim quite well, and now he's going to miss, you know, some more time trying to get this hamstring good. You know, he missed time with some knee tendonitis. He's just more really than anyone that I can ever remember, and I think, you know, he's got to find some new kind of regimen here because you know, whether it's going to P3 during the off season or, you know, whatever it is, what he's doing just hasn't been working for him as far as just staying healthy. He's just gets all these little nick injuries, and, you know, especially when it's muscle related, tendonitis, like that's the stuff that you hope is can be preventable. But in the meantime, they need to just play him as little as possible just to reduce the odds, you know, and it's not even always going to get fatigued. It's just, hey, if you play 20 minutes, your odds of getting hurt are two-thirds of what they are if you play 30 minutes. You know, I mean, I think that's basically like the most basic reason not to play guys as many minutes. Yeah. So anyway, yeah.
It's reducing the kind of the catastrophic risk, I guess is probably the way to put it. On the more rosy note, Derek Favors is actually playing basketball again.
They got beat tonight, though, didn't they?
They lost to the Pistons by three.
Yeah, at home. I mean, not a terrible loss. And who knows? I didn't get a chance to watch any of the other games, obviously, and see how he looked. But that it was very concerning that he had missed so many games with back spasms. But hopefully he's back and he'll look okay. I mean, you have to imagine, though, this is something they're going to have to continue to manage throughout the rest of the year. Boogie Cousins had 56 points today. I did not get a chance to watch that. I think probably for our 15 and 60 on the West, our next one, I will just go through that game and talk about how he was able to do that. I mean, my initial thought, both in that 48-point game he had and this one, is just his shot chart has almost no jumpers in it. He's just been getting to the rim. And, You know, that's how you shoot 21 out of 30, which I think is what he was. But he fouled out in the second overtime, and they ended up losing. And this is just one of my biggest things. If you're not going to do it in the first overtime, at least when you get into the second overtime, give guys an extra foul. I mean, is there any reason that you can think of not to do that? They're playing more minutes. You should be allowed another foul. You have this classic game going on. You just ruined this guy. He could have had 60 in this game, probably would have, if he doesn't foul out. And it's not like he deserves to foul out, like he's fouling too much. Like, you have to play more time. Obviously, you're going to pick up more fouls.
I agree with that. I also support the idea, not separately, but in conjunction with it, of allowing a team to give up, let's say, a technical, so give up a free throw to bring a guy in who has fouled out.
Finally, last thing, Woj had a report indicating that there are four serious candidates are emerging for the Nets GM job. Brian Colangelo, former Suns and Raptors GM. Danny Ferry, who basically was forced to resign in disgrace, but with his wallet intact for the guaranteed contract after he read some racist comments about Luol Deng from a scouting report. He really did an excellent job in Atlanta outside of that. And then Arturas Karnišovas, who was a former player for the Lithuanian national team, worked in the Rockets organization, now is an assistant GM for the Nuggets and has excellent overseas scouting ties. And then Gerson Rochas, who is most known for being a Rockets executive, going to the Mavs, having it not work out there after like 3 months, and then going back to the Rockets. So do any of those candidates, you know, if you had to pick among those four, who sounds the most interesting to you?
Well, I'm most familiar with Ferry's work, and I think he did an excellent job in Atlanta. But I'm intrigued by the non-Americans. I believe both Karnišovas and Rosas are, you know, they're international.
Yeah, Rosas is Colombian.
He's
although
Colombian.
I'm not sure whether he has like any particular international basketball background. I think
right.
He might just be an immigrant.
Yeah, but what I like about those guys when you look at their profiles is that the Nets have to do a nice job of kind of mining guys out of kind of obscurity, and the Nuggets have done a really nice job of that in recent years, and so have the Rockets. So, I mean, you want to look for people who were involved in those successes.
Yeah, and again, to four candidates, sometimes when guys do a story, the guys will be announced as a candidate, as a favor to them, or an agent. I don't want to speculate as to whether any of those in particular might be the case for here, but always something to consider, you know, when you see someone's name come up for a job, but there hasn't been actually like, you know, a specifically reported interview or anything like that. That can be a little bit misleading at times, but I'm not saying that that's the case here. Just something to always, with these sorts of reports, have your radar up for.
Oh, we should quickly mention Andre Robertson. He has a right knee sprain, according to Royce Young. He will be reevaluated in 3 weeks.
Yeah, so that's quite a bit of time. He will miss the Warriors game then on February 6th when they come here. And, you know, that's going to be another really interesting game. I have a question for you quickly. After watching this game, do you think that Oklahoma City could be a more difficult opponent for the Warriors than the Spurs?
Yeah. Oof. I'm gonna say that you can make an argument, but I wouldn't. And the reason for that is that as great as Oklahoma City's guys are in, you know, their star players are in ISO and everything else, that I don't think they execute well enough, particularly defensively, to really do it. But at the same point, a healthy Thunder team have given the Warriors games for the last 4 years.
The argument is, defensively, the Warriors are designed to force you into playing isolation ball. Well, the Thunder already do that, and they have two of the best guys in the league at doing that. And so that's not going to be as much of an issue if they're not going to have a ton of assists or two guys have to make the plays. KD has always lit up the Warriors one-on-one, even going back to that brilliant 30-point first half he had in the game before he sprained his ankle last year. He had that 54 the season before against the Warriors. So he might be the one guy in the league I look at that I don't think they necessarily have an answer for defensively. So you can, construct an argument that OKC can stay with them. Now, I don't think that overall their defense is good enough. I think that they're just going to get lit up by the Warriors. So I'm not ready to say that yet when you consider how historically good the Spurs have been. They're going to play a lot better in the next game against Golden State for sure. And I think shoveling dirt on their grave at this point, especially with just an unbelievable Curry performance, which, you know, I mean, it's basically becoming de rigueur here for him, but expecting him to play quite this well next time against this great defense, you know, I'm not sure if that's going to be the case. So, yeah, I would still say the Spurs are the bigger competition, but you could at least see why you might think it could be Oklahoma City instead.
And that's why you want the one seed.
Yeah, that's true, because you only got to play one of those teams if that's the case. I tweeted something out. We try to avoid hyperbole very much on this show. And we cover the Warriors all the time. It's very easy to get kind of sucked into the vortex. I've been lucky to avoid accusations of being a homer, but I'm sure, you know, there are some people who probably think that, or that we talk about the Warriors too much. So my tweet during the game was, with them, what they're doing to the Spurs, who basically had the best point differential of any team up until this time, beating them by 30 and just making them look stupid like this, I was saying it is actually possible that that right there might be the best we'll see basketball played. Is that just ridiculous hyperbole, or is that, you know, not ridiculous hyperbole?
It sounds ridiculous, but I don't think it's completely there. And I would draw a line between what we have seen and what we will see. I'm somebody who, as a fundamentally optimistic person, and, you know, with coaching and skill development and all that.
Yeah, I mean,
you know,
20 years from now, I mean, I'm sure whatever team, if they played against the Warriors, would beat them. You know, that's just the way that the world works. But, I mean, just relative to what the competition is, and with competition now being so much harder than it was, you know, back in like 1972, you know, when you have so many more smart front offices and more teams and more great players and all that stuff. Yeah, I mean, I think it's got to be right up there if it's not the greatest.
And what was incredible to me about the Warriors' performance in this game was that they did so many things right that you just don't see very often. The way that they were in the passing lanes, you talked during the game on Twitter, and we talked about it here, about their hands, things like that. Their passing was unbelievable. Like, even some of them, we talked during the game about how Draymond threw this one really ambitious pass to Curry that probably would have worked if the guy guarding Curry was not Kawhi Leonard. And so the fact that they're willing to go for that is really incredible. And they're so like, and what
I mean, they were making, like, there was a stretch where they were making like two great plays on either end on seemingly like every possession.
Right. And they have a lot of players who are capable of that. Like, you think about this Warriors team, when they tighten up their rotation, it's just going to be vicious. Like, this is a team that when you can excise,
yeah, I mean, they played Spates 18 minutes in this game and like did totally fine, even though that was it was kind of ridiculous that they kept playing him. But, you know, that's kind of the kumbaya Kerr approach. But it's crazy. I mean, and you know what? Like, if you think we talk about these guys too much, let me know. And we try to do a great job of covering the rest of the league too. But having one of the greatest teams of all time in our backyard, it's just a privilege, and I don't want to lose sight of how awesome this is. Because, and I think everyone, because we're not going to see them, and we're not going to see what Steph Curry is doing this year probably for a long time either. I mean, I think that would be a very interesting project to go back and look at, like, the greatest 50-game stretches ever and see what measures up to this, because there sure as heck aren't many of them, and this might even be the best one, especially when you consider the team success that has come along with it.
And what I want to emphasize with all of this, and I say this when I'm on the radio in the Bay Area a lot, is appreciate it while it lasts, because something that fans of the NBA can appreciate now, arguably more than ever, is that success can fall apart for a lot of reasons. And, you know, other than the Spurs, that is really the precedent, is that when a team looks good. And so what that has done to me as a fan of basketball, first and foremost, is I'm appreciating things more in the present. And it just so happens that the best team right now is the team that we both are around more often. So I feel like my sports fandom, if you want to call it that, has been geared towards appreciating teams like this. And the fact that they're here just makes it easier.
All right, let's call it quits for today. But stay tuned for – I'll just record a little bit on my own for some of these great pop quotes that started things as a little appendix here. Thanks so much for listening. Follow me on Twitter, NateDuncanNBA. Danny is Danny LaRue. Support our great sponsors, SeatGeek. Loot Crate is another new one, especially. That's a really good one if you are a nerd and you like getting exclusive gear in the mail every month from very nerdy game and pop culture phenomena. And also, of course, Helix Mattresses. Helix Sleep as well, if you want to get yourself an amazing night's sleep for, you know, maybe like a third of the price of some comparable mattresses. That would be pretty awesome, too. So, Danny, thanks so much for coming on. And before I get loopy here at 1:45 in the morning, we'll call it quits. Talk to you all next time.
So here's about 6 minutes of Pop's pregame presser. He was really funny and engaging and also gave some pretty insightful answers. I thought one of the better pregame pressers that I've heard. So if you want to stick around and listen to it, here it is in full unedited glory.
Fine wine?
Ate all day and all night for 2 days, accompanied by wine choices. Worked out too, though. I told him we're going to kick your butt.
How much did you talk to Steve while he was out, and did you sense
none of your business
frustration? Kid, what if someone else asked him?
I'd say none of your damn business.
Do you care about it? Was it nice that Steve is active in the coaches' game and all specialty?
Oh, it's great. I mean, you know, he didn't enjoy being on the sidelines all this time. You can bet that. He's a very competitive guy, and it's great that he's back. You know, it doesn't diminish what Luke did. I mean, Luke was amazing. He did a great job for his first, you know, go at it. And I'm sure he's happy to have Steve back, too. And, you know, Steve's a different animal. He exudes a lot of confidence, and he instills it. And a lot of people can't do that. There's no formula for it, but having Steve back is very, very, very significant for that club, that group of guys.
Would you like to coach the All-Star game?
No comment.
You see any similarities in the way Steph Curry and Tim Duncan carry themselves and lead their teams?
I don't know if I could really compare. You know, I'm not with Steph like I am with Tim, so I don't really know if I could do an accurate job of that.
How would you say LaMarcus is coming along, and has he adapted about as well as he can at this point?
Yeah, it's, you know, it usually takes people about a season to get used to the system and that sort of thing, and in that sense, he's been really quick in picking things up and starting to feel comfortable. But I think it's more than the system. I think it's a matter of somebody learning how to play with all new people. You know, he's figured out very quickly where to be on the court with Manu or Timmy or the substitutes. That takes time when you've played someplace for 9 years and all of a sudden it's a different group of guys. But all considered, he's done a really good job of picking things up quickly.
How is Manu? Because maybe last...
How is he?
How is Manu Ginobili?
He's a nice guy.
We are from Bahia Blanca, you know, from the city. We met each other 10 years ago.
Okay.
In the winter afternoon.
Sorry, I don't remember. My bad. Anybody need that?
Maybe the last game against Lakers is his best in this season. Do you think so?
Well, he was 9 for 10, so that... So, yeah, it was his best. Okay. Yeah. That's better than, like, maybe he was 6 for 9 in some other game, you know. So 9 for 10, that's better. You're welcome. It takes a long time to think these questions up, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
All night long.
We worked all day on them.
Okay, everyone's trying to downplay the game. You know, it's not one game and all this stuff.
Right.
Isn't it okay if we play it up?
Why not? You know, two teams playing it up would seem to be logical to me. I mean, you know, from our perspective, we have to take it a little bit differently because we've got a lot of games and that sort of thing. But from you guys' perspective, yeah, big deal. you feel different going against a team that's the best team in the league. I got butterflies in my gut and excited about the game and all that sort of thing. And I don't feel like that every night.
Don't you think your players maybe a little bit?
Sure. I think if they're honest, they'd say that.
Yeah. Your players ever politic with you to, like, if you're going to rest a guy, I'm not saying tonight, but sure, in certain situations, and they come to you and say, wait a minute, I don't want to sit out that game. That's, to me, it's a big game to me. I want to play.
Yes, I get that.
Yeah.
You know, with the guys that we've rested over time, you come to an understanding. I mean, we've been together so long. They know how I think, and they know that if they feel differently, they have license to tell me that they don't want to do that, and I have to listen to that and heed that. But we usually come to a pretty good compromise, you know, almost all the time. I can't really think of a situation where I forced it on them. We figured out a way to agree on what we're going to do, play or not play.
Do they ever think you need a rest?
I bet they feel that a lot more than they admit. I get this once in a while, you know, pop. So that's what I get that one.
No, nobody got lost between yesterday and today, so everybody else.
So all the players showed up, so it was good.
Who are you starting for Duncan?
David West. Yeah.
It's harder to play a game against a really close friend.
In all honesty, I've been around a long time. I got a lot of close friends, I guess. it's really not, in a sense. You know, it depends how close you are, but the closer you are to one of these guys, you win and you actually, to some degree, feel a little bit badly for your opponent, which sounds really unmanly, I guess, in our macho world that we live in. And if you lose, it doesn't hurt so much, like a normal loss. So that's just me.
Thank you very much. I got you with my pen. I apologize.
It's okay.